IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 54 of the Killing It,
Killing it Podcast.
We're still
at home. Dave,
I want you to start off just because you have something special going on as the day that we're recording this, and it harkens back to when we were in Australia and you were sitting in a bar watching a baseball game in the morning.
It does. So we are recording on this show. So for those of you who get it, you get it to Tuesday. We're recording on Thursday, April 2nd. Today is supposed to be the home DC opener for baseball. And I was supposed to be off today. I was supposed to be it is in the afternoon, so I should be several beers into my day. And they should have raised the World Series banner and Washington celebrate our win. And so I'm wearing my jersey today. The guys have seen it on video and it's the same jersey that I wore down under, for those that saw that, because I am marking the occasion, and I'm taking comfort in the now statistical fact that we are the unchallenged world champions for longer than any other baseball team will have ever been, because there will be a longer gap between the end of the World Series and the resumption of play than any other historical team.
See, Dave, kudos to your professionalism there, that you are not at the game, but also not two or three beers in. I mean, that's some serious commitment to your professional craft here, sir.
Well, you know, we're all going to be getting used to the new normal, right? And so that meant today is now a work day instead of a baseball day. There will be a baseball day in my future, and I will enjoy it. It will be all the sweeter for it.
So will it lose any of its shine, or will it just be even a bigger party because it's been delayed?
I think it'll actually be an even bigger party because not only will you be celebrating the win itself, but it will also be a return to those joys that we get out of life in that other way will return as well. And so I think it'll be I'm looking very much forward to that first opening day whenever it comes. And I'm just taking comfort in the fact that we now have a new record. So it's all attitude, right, everybody? It's all attitude.
And you have a footnote that will last forever in baseball history. In the one sport where people track absolutely every stupid
little thing. Like, we now have this other little asterisk of, oh, the next season was delayed, so they were the longest holding of the championship unchallenged. If they keep stats, which I'm sure they do, we'll get that one. But that does mean, since we are all together doing some actual stuff, you guys, I assume, are just plugging away at home, right?
Yes. Well, I've been very busy, so I have this production schedule of videos and podcasts and so forth, and putting together a new class for a vendor and doing some videos, and so I've got plenty of things to keep me busy.
Well, that's good.
I was just going to echo that, right? There are certain manufacturers and certain distributors and certain people who are using a difficult time and an interruption to show how much they are willing and able to invest into their partner communities, to talk about not just financing programs and super tactical things, but also business development, how to manage through uncertainty. They're putting out these kinds of programs. I've actually had two new opportunities come along for precisely those reasons. Let's talk about how to manage through this uncertain period, and it's funded by a manufacturer. And you know what? All I have to say is, who you choose to work with, if you are a solution provider, the vendors that you carry, the products that you sell, that's voluntary. You get to choose. And right now, I think we have all observed, you're probably learning an awful lot about who takes you seriously, who invests in you when times get tough. And I think right now is a very good time to figure out who's really in it with you and who's just practicing a whole lot of lip service, because we are really appreciative of the opportunity to actually be creating new work and new curriculum during this uncertain time. Some vendors are willing to go there. And if they are, you want to be in business with those guys. If they are not willing to invest in you now of all times,
yep,
I think maybe you just learned something about those folks.
Well, and then my last point that we're going to dive into topics is I think it's important to acknowledge the things that aren't happening because it's a good part of the process. You acknowledge them. You don't deny. You acknowledge. You nod to it. You have a moment, and then you look forward to when it happens again. But you just—it's important to acknowledge it. But we should actually do some topics.
The first
so topic, many topics.
It's something that I really think is fun and interesting because it brings up a topic that we almost gave up on. Like we basically said, okay, well, you know, 3D printing is gone. It's history. We checked that box, you know, and lo and behold, it turns out that 3D printing is becoming something that was just waiting for its killer app. And its killer app is open source sharing of recipes to create medical devices during the crisis. And so we've got a few articles we're going to point to, but it's very, very cool. On one hand, you have people running this program through open Facebook groups where they're just posting up things so that everybody can 3D print them. And then you have the FDA, who don't get paid to do this, putting out guidelines and saying, hey, if you're going to contribute this way, we appreciate it. Here's how to do it the right way.
Right. And I think it's important because people should read this because the FDA guidance is not necessarily saying, oh, this is all fine. It's very clear saying, look, there are certain times and certain places for this technology to be used. One of the things that jumped out at me in reviewing this was the note about 3D printed masks. I said, you know, look, they are not necessarily the same. And we're from the FDA perspective, they're saying, look, we're not recommending masks. We're saying that is a different thing. There's a testing level to it. But there are other circumstances where that might make a lot of sense. There was an interesting story a couple of weeks ago where they printed a replacement part in Italy for a fail, you know, for that they couldn't get on a part, a valve that it was dying on a piece of medical equipment. And they reverse engineered it and they 3D printed it and they were able to save a bunch of lives. And, you know, and so you're exactly right. There's definitely really interesting applications for this. You know, I'm not going to sit here and go like, oh, everyone should just run out and solve this with 3D printing.
No, but this is one of those times where I will do myself a virtual high five because if you guys will recall, a couple of months ago, we did a topic on 3D printing. We were going back and forth like, is it cool? Is it just nifty? Or is there a legit business application? It was hot on my mind because I had just come back from a conference with a bunch of designer industrial manufacturing companies who are deeply involved in this process. And I was talking about some of the things that were happening right now with industrial manufacturing in place, on site, on demand. And it is still equally fascinating. It's just that exactly, I think Dave, you were the one that made the point in our prior conversation. It's not like people are gonna go volunteer for that instead of traditional supply chains because the best manufacturing channel back then was what we referred to as China, right? And then we said, well, exactly. And until you could compete with them on cost and convenience and certain other things, why would anybody ever change anything? And we left it by saying, you just need to have something that will happen. Well, guess what? Something happened. And if you think about, again, the underlying value proposition of 3D printing, and I'm not talking about like that little $499 one that sits on a kid's desk in a makerspace in an elementary school. Those are fascinating, and I believe that that's valuable. We're talking about, you know, machines that might cost thousands of dollars that can do industrial scale with actual tolerances in manufacturing conditions down to the thousandths of an inch so that you can not just make interesting little baubles that you set on the side, but you can, with certain materials that are now available, you can make fine grain machined parts that can be used in full-scale industrial manufacturing. And even if all you're doing is saying, let's print some face shields for use in a hospital, the fact that I can do the quantity I need right here. Don't have to over order and guess at supply. I won't have a shortage. I don't have to wait for shipping. I don't have to disinfect those boxes based on where they're coming from because they are here and under my control. That, in a nutshell, is the essence of why 3D printing will have a fantastic application space.
So you said something that I want to follow up on that was embedded in there. You talked about, you mentioned this, you know, in the situation of supply chain distribution and or disruption. And I think that I want to double click there for a moment and sort of say, okay, cool. I'm going to zoom that out. First off, yes. What's interesting is in the event of a supply chain disruption. Now, disruption can happen because of an event, or it can happen because of poor planning. And I don't want to go down the rat. I'm not going to go down a political rat hole or anything along those lines. I want to make the observation of a situation happens where the supply chain is not supplying what is needed. How we got there is not the discussion. I'm saying we are in that situation. Thus, this fits nicely. That's an example where in a disruption, you can leverage this in a new way. What I will also posit is that, you know, in our theme of talking about things post this period of time, I think it will be really interesting to examine supply chains and understand how this technology could be used to change a supply chain, to augment it, to be ready to handle disruptions. Can disruptions of supply chains be handled? That for me is an interesting post conversation. Carl, I see, well, you not
for me, a couple of things. So the thing I got, you know, sort of stood out for me is for the longest time, if you've been involved in 3D printing, the promise was that you're going to be able to get these spare parts, right? Like you mentioned, there are ventilators that have been in storage and now they're coming out to hospitals. Most of them, something deteriorated, needs to be replaced. Those parts can be 3D printed. The interesting thing for me is all about the post-virus era, because Think about what we're going through with cell phones, where we have this right to repair, when right to repair stretches out to toasters and microwaves and right, all the crap you have in your house. Oh, I need a new gear to replace so that I don't have to buy a new printer. Okay. Download this thing, 3D print it yourself. And these are not the $500 printers that many of us have for hobbies.
Well, and I've got an interesting example of that links to your right to repair. So if everybody who's listened to the podcast a lot knows I'm a retro gamer. There is a very specialized group of people that are creating devices to support these very old pieces of technology. So if you take a quick moment and think about this in abstract terms, trying to maintain devices from 30 years ago, 40 years ago, where the manufacturer is no longer making things. But now there are 3D printed solutions for cases, for mounting devices, to keep these old pieces of electronics operating. That's an exact kind of situation where, like, yeah, if you're trying to bring old ventilators back online or you're trying to recover these older devices, you can see where, okay, there's where it really can make a difference, where the volume's not high enough either.
Well, and again, it's Carl's exactly on the thing. If it's interesting in healthcare right now for an emergency application, it will have mirrored use cases in very many other applications, right? Think of it like this. So I am a guy who is fascinated by classic cars. I have zero skills to refurbish those things, but I really enjoy watching other people do these things. And it often involves a very painstaking refabrication of a part, something in an engine and a transmission, something in that machine that literally does not get manufactured by anybody anywhere. And so they hand make it and they show them crudely bending metal. Imagine if you could just 3D print that thing, right? Refrigerators, vacuum cleaners, everything will get a second life when you can maintain it locally without having to bother about standing up a global scale supply chain.
Yeah. So I declare this is no longer dead. we will bring that up again.
Yeah, there's something here.
So I think, Dave, the next topic is one of your pet peeves.
Well, this was, and I'm going to sort of say, like, this made the roster because, Ryan, you sent an article and we had kind of a bit of a discussion. So I'll start with your email. Ryan, what perked your interest on this article?
Well, so it was based on three successive conversations that I had directly with customers who are asking the question, when is it too soon to start selling again, given ... right? Like, of all the stuff that's going on, when is it too soon? And then I saw this article come through from a guy, everybody out there knows Jeffrey Moore, who wrote Crossing the Chasm. We're very familiar with his reasoning, and he happened to pop up a new article that was focused on that specific question. And he made an essential point that I was like, hey, that's cool. I said the same thing unprompted an hour ago to my own client. And essentially what he said was, if you are selling the right way, you should never be stopping, because quote unquote, the right way to sell is not, I have a thing and I want to cause you to purchase it. It should be, you have a need and I am here to help. And if that's not the way that you are selling right now, you got other problems. But if that is the way that you're selling right now, that's something that we all appreciate more than ever. I've seen some really good examples of this in the last 3 weeks. I have seen some really bad examples where people are like, hey, what's it going to take to get you to buy one of my devices right now? You know, that's rude. That's distasteful. Nobody thinks that that's acceptable right now. But a call that comes from my sales rep who says, I know you, we have a relationship, and I understand what matters in your world. I'll bet you're dealing with this challenge here. I might have a new way to solve your problem that you haven't been thinking of yet, and I think I can help you weather this difficult situation. Okay, not only don't stop selling, make more of those calls today than you have ever made before, because people need that stuff.
At the end of the day, your clients, especially the last couple of weeks where we've spent all of our energy getting people set up to work remotely, they absolutely needed that. It's legitimate work. There's no question about it. You should be paid full price for it. This is what your clients needed. You provided it. Now, what's the next thing they need? Because they're, you know, their world has changed. Their normal has changed, but their needs didn't go away. They just shifted. And so giving them what they need is always legit. You know, don't gouge them. Don't charge them $700 an hour, but you get paid full price.
Well, I always start from this position is I don't like to sell. I like to create environments for people to buy, right? Those are two entirely different things. People hate to be sold to, but they love to buy. Everyone loves to buy, and they always have. And I think, you know, I can sort of quickly boil this down. The thing that's been annoying me is look, if you're taking a marketing piece and slapping COVID-19, or you're taking your sales script and all of a sudden the word COVID-19 appears 12 times in it because you're trying to seem relevant, you are doing it wrong. Right. Yeah. And I know instantly now the people that are getting it and are not, because of the thousands of emails I have received from everyone who's very concerned about COVID-19 and offer X. And it's like there's a complete disconnect.
Emails do you have in your deleted item folder that are unopened with the words COVID-19?
Oh, it's so bad. It immediately tells me all of the people that don't get it. And that is so obvious. So my answer is when is the right time to sell? It's every day. But it's about creating environments where people can buy, not I am pushing something on you. Or more importantly, if I'm just, even to the example you just said about calling the customer, if you're calling the customer and going, hey, how you doing? Are you, what's going on? Like, I always say, like, the first thing to start with is, how's your family? Is everybody okay? Are you safe? Are you in a place? Because if the answer to that is no, the discussion is over. Right. You know, you have to start there. And then you say, like, if you're not safe, we're not having a conversation about your current business situation. We're having a conversation about you and your family and what they need.
But then again, I mean, and in a, in a gratifying way, but also equally frustrating way, that should have been the lesson that every sales human learned a generation ago. But the fact that that's still something that clients hire us to do is an acknowledgement of that's not the way most sales humans work. And the problem that we have now, I believe, is only an exaggerated version of the problem that we always have. You should never not be solving customers' problems, and you should never force them to search for that information. You should never sit inside your bunker and say, well, I do something that's really, really valuable, but I feel a little bit uneasy about talking to somebody about that right now. I'm going to wait until it's not gauche to go out and communicate. It's never tacky to help people. If what you offer genuinely helps, please do that now more than ever. If what you do is not positioned to help, knock it off and go back to the basics and learn how to communicate fundamentally. This is what should be. And I mean, we've had this conversation with people all the time, right? We spend a good chunk of our time doing sales training for partner sales reps, for vendor sales reps, et cetera. And one of the things that we always say is, you know, I'm not here to say beginner sales, advanced sales, right? Master level sales. That's not the way we do things. It is the correct way to sell in today's environment, because it's always based on context. It's always based on who you are communicating to and what makes them urgently need to solve a problem. That is the new way of selling effectively. And it is a skill that can be learned. It is remarkable to me how many very advanced technology professionals are not convinced that the things they do for their customers are valuable enough that it would justify reaching out to say, I know you're hurting, can I help? You know, it's not rocket science. To the complexity of the sales process is nowhere near the level of complexity of the technology solutions that we sell. Yeah. We are smart people who can understand these kinds of things. It's just style and tone and help, not sell.
And if the focus is on help and not sales, that goes a long way. So I've always been a huge advocate of what I call the roadmap process, right? That you help your clients create a roadmap of where they're going and how they're going to get there. And for 10 years, I have used the examples of this really helped in the last economic downturn when I had clients that were shrinking and reorganizing, and we helped them get the most out of their technology. And it didn't make us a bunch of money, but it helped them survive, helped them to be more efficient, helped them to save money, right? Helped them to use their technology appropriately. And we made a little money along the way, but we kept all those clients. We kept some of them in business. And even the ones that eventually got bought by their competition, we helped them make the best of that situation. And, you know, you always have the opportunity to work with your clients towards their goals instead of feeling like it's a competition between you and your client for who gets to keep which dollar.
So, right. Amen.
Yeah. And this is a huge thing I'm pushing and helping people in my, you know, membership community to actually, like, how do you do this roadmap process? And we're focusing in on that because now is the time to execute it.
It's so true. And you know, the other thing about it is, and I'll just sort of coda this at the end, is it's like, I don't think it's wrong to tell people what you do. Like that's another people oftentimes lose in all of this selling is I've got to ask them, I've got to talk to them. It is okay to tell somebody what you do. Right. That is actually expected.
What you do is help them make good decisions about technology.
Exactly. And if you, and then to say, and if you need help with that, that's what I'm here for. Exactly. That's okay. That is an offer, not a selling process.
And with that, we're done with that topic. Let's move on to, this is kind of a cool thing, what's going on with telemedicine.
Well, so we've included an article. This is a Forbes article that talks about this. And I, you know, it immediately gets your attention when the headline is post-coronavirus, how telemedicine could upend the healthcare system. It's like, oh, I'm intrigued. You know, I mean, because you can already see, and you know, it's hard to tell during something exactly what's going to all happen, but we're going to do it anyway. You can already see an instant shift in our mentality around think about, in particular, telemedicine. The idea of communicating over electronically, where you're not necessarily physically with someone, where now, particularly based on the circumstance, it's not only a good idea, it's an advisable idea to not have physical contact to spread something. I think telemedicine and all of the electronic promises are actually going to make a big shift now and in terms of our thinking.
Well, and there are always going to be use cases, right? Like there are going to be some places where they need to physically see you and actually provide some intervention care or physical manipulation of your bones or whatever, right? Like there are going to be cases where telemedicine doesn't solve the problem, but there are going to be a tremendous number of use cases where we have been reluctant, we've been shy, we've been, I don't know, and it's going to be 100% appropriate, and it is going to create entirely new scale opportunities to provide high quality care to people. It's going to solve access and distance problems. You know, if you don't live in a town with a specialist or something, it's going to create an awful lot of upside. It is also going to require that people who do telemedicine, I mean, everyone out there should already be thinking privacy and security, et cetera. But those people are also going to have to learn how to do this well, right? How to do it professionally and how to provide bedside manner, to borrow the old world terminology, via a disconnected remote interface, right? Every one of us has been on more video conferences in the last 3 weeks than ever before in the history of our life. And we all know there are some people who do it very well and professionally, and I don't regret getting on that call with that person. And then there are other people that I'm like, oh, crap, I have to get on this call with that person because they're terrible at using remote and collaborative technologies. Not only selling the technology, I mean, there's a telemedicine system, it requires a camera, it requires a network, a VPN, et cetera, all the layers. But it also requires some user training from a technology professional to say, here's how to set it up, here's how to schedule it, here's how to communicate before and after, here's what comes across well on a camera, here's what, you know, please stop shaking your hands really close to the camera, that makes people feel nervous, right? Like there are all kinds of things, and that's an extra layer that as technology professionals, nobody else is going to come with that knowledge built in. If you're going to sell the camera and the network and the software and support the infrastructure, you also need to support the humans who are involved in that stuff.
To a large extent, this is literally the case of the technology has been getting there for a long, long, long time. And the technology has been waiting for an excuse to be used. And, you know, TDOC, T-D-O-C is the stock ticker, is one of the few companies that's done really well in the last month because they do telemedicine. And, you know, I remember we used to have a client that was a heart doctor, had 5 heart physicians working for him. And we helped them develop a system so they could do a consultation with another doctor in another city in the state of California, looking at the same live video of a live, you know, heart video at the same time, right? And do a consult. And that was seriously high end and ridiculously expensive 15 years ago. Now it's fairly commonplace. And so, you know, this is literally something where I'm not saying anybody was waiting for the virus, but the technology has been there for a long time, and I don't think it's going to go away. I don't think it's going to.
Well, I'm really waiting for that the promise of electronic medical records and data being tied into. And you can see pieces of it because I've actually experienced it myself in medicine. So anybody that's known me for a little while, I put on some weight a couple of years over the past couple of years that I with too many times on the road and too much beer. But I was, and my doctor and I focused on weight loss, and I took off a bunch of weight, and we worked together on that, but I also used some of the tools there. You know, I was using a scale that measures my weight and logs that into Apple Health. And I use my Apple Watch to track activities, and I use Weight Watchers as my health, you know, my food management program, and that links to it. And my doctor and I have both wanted to plug my data into his data so that we could collaborate on it. And we both feel like it is so very close in terms of it is almost there, the ability, because it's getting to that point and we just haven't had the push.
It seems like what's missing is some lawyer's got to come up with a document that says, look, stuff you got from your iWatch or your Google device or whatever, you know, that's not real medicine, but we're going to plug them together and everybody agrees it means what it means and it doesn't mean what it doesn't mean. And, you know, it's just information.
Well, right. Exactly. It's data.
There's data management and there's APIs. And I certainly hope that everybody listening here is paying attention to the API world, the integration of not just application functionality, but the integration of data sets for functional purposes in a remote telemedicine world, in an IoT world, in a remote worker world. All of these things are going to become prime time technology requirements. And again, I think that this is, and Carl's 100% correct, this is going nowhere. It's not only going to stick around, it will expand significantly, and we will be better off for it as patients than consumers of those services. There will still be times that you need to go to the doctor, but 9 times out of 10, when I go to the doctor, it's information exchange and behavioral adaptations and then data review. Nobody is actually, you know, performing surgery on me usually when I go to the doctor. There are times when I need to go, but 8 out of 10 times you don't need to go. You just need to interact and be able to share data. We will all be better off for that if we can figure out how to make that feel normal, professional, and secure.
Yeah, and the privacy and security pieces is going to matter. And by the way, everything that we're talking about, we would be remiss if we did not, you know, flag opportunity next to it, which is why we're talking about it. But I think that there is, you know, I think there's real opportunity, and there is instantly need and awareness of this based on what we're dealing with right now. You know, how much better off would we all be if this was in place?
We're essentially out of time, but I do have to say that one of the things that's going to happen is that the part of what comes out of this is suddenly people say, well, I can offer these services for free to the poor in another city, another country, right? The whole like Doctors Without Borders, those borders, if you go to telemedicine, there never have been any borders. There just hasn't been enough technology. Now we have the technology. That will do it for another episode. And this has been episode 54 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.